Welcome to the Growth Pod. Today on the podcast, we have Jesse James Robluski. He has been at the helm of a New York marketing agency for close to three decades. His often offbeat work has been featured in Rolling Stone, the book 505 Weirdest Websites Ever, and Fangoria, as well as a plethora of other media outlets. After the realization that the entire marketing industry has gone insane, he retooled, reimagined, and reemerged as something different, something more powerful than the marketing world has ever seen. Ready to share his new vision for the world, he proudly presents Marketing for Supervillains, Diabolical Tips on Differentiation, Decommoditization, and World Domination. Jesse, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Angela. Excited to be here.
I am so excited. I held this up during your intro. We're going to get into your book a little bit later in the episode. But today, specifically, you're talking about how to build brand distinction in a sea of competitors. So why do you think that this is an important topic for business owners to pay attention to?
So it became an important topic to me after much denial. I realized that I had become a commodity. And with an increase of competitors into the field, things like Fiverr, things like offshoring, and now with AI, I'm not as special to my clients as I was in the past, right? I used to get a tremendous amount of pride. My clients would call me. I'm the only one that could solve their problems. And now the conversation's kind of switched to, well, why should I use you? I can get it cheaper here. And with the just the internet in general, I think every company out there now faces an explosion of choice, right? So back in the day, you'd have to like know someone who knows someone to get a good marketer. Now, at any given moment, I can find 1,000 marketers and without getting out of my chair, interview them and pre-qualify them. So I think across the board, if not just for myself, figuring out a way, especially in a market where people are racing to the bottom and they're starting to feel the price crunch, figuring out a way to actually charge a premium where everybody else is going in the opposite direction as far as pricing goes.
Yeah, absolutely. We're both in the agency space. And so I really relate to, you know, somebody taking your proposal, giving it to somebody. Well, this has happened to me. Taking my proposal, giving it to somebody else, and then told me, you know, this person's going to do the exact same thing for cheaper. In your book, you mentioned that every brand over time will become commoditized. So why do you think that is?
So similar to the internet experience, I think we're inching towards an age of abundancy. And, you know, the recent headlines were now with AI and the ability to efficientize, if that's even a word, everything. We're heading towards this age of abundance. And people just, you know, are used to things on demand. And if you can't give it to me now, I got 10 other people that are ready to give it to me probably faster, probably cheaper. So I think it pertains to any industry. One of my favorite examples is, you know, back in the 80s, there was an airline war. Nobody really had a brand loyalty to an airline. What'd you decide on? Oh, cheapest ticket. I'm gonna use that ticket and hop on a plane. Then some genius came up with the idea of, you know, a rewards program. What if we reward people for flying our airline? We'll call them frequent flyer miles. And that differentiated that airline, and their sales went through the roof. And then everybody else, what happened? They're like, oh, you know, we'll jump onto that trend. And now frequent flyer miles are par for the course. So now everybody's back down here in a price war again. So even if you're in an industry or successfully decommoditized yourself, it's not the end games, right? Because everyone's going to either copy or catch up. So it's a constant battle of always trying to remain differentiated. And if you're like me, you take somewhat a decent amount of pride in being, you know, I always strive to be the best. I'm always refining my education. And for that not to be reflected in my sales is like demoralizing. So I'm always trying to figure out ways to, you know, continue to stay up here, much like the airline did with their frequent flyer miles.
Yeah, I love that. I think that was something that resonated so deeply with me in the book is even though you are the best and you're constantly refining your skill set, that might not be reflected in your sales, like you said. And so you have to think of these other ways to show that you are remaining competitive in the marketplace. So I love your example of the frequent flyer miles. I know like Starbucks did something similar with their like drink rewards program. But again, now everybody's doing that. And so how can you continue to, you know, innovate and try and remain decommoditized in the marketplace? So with that, What are the three? You outline like 12 ways in the book, I think. But what are three key ways that the audience can go and start building brand distinction in their niche, in their to stand out from their sea of competitors?
Absolutely. So it's typically, and I mentioned, you know, in most business books, they say, go out, find your differentiator, and then tell it to the world. And those are two monumental tasks for anyone. They don't really walk you through the process. So in the book, I narrow down the 12 ways that big brands, or big and small brands throughout history, have successfully decommoditized themselves. And we call it the universe of differentiation. But a great example, even before you get to the book, before you kind of dive in, is you take an industry that's saturated, pun intended, any industry. I like to use water, the ultimate commodity. Water's free, it's pretty much anywhere you go, but they still sell billions and billions of dollars of water. So right now, across the globe, there are 7,000 brands of bottled water, right? And by and large, if you sit without using Google, just have pen and paper, chances are, if you try to write down every brand you can think of, you'll probably max out at seven brands out of 7,000. And that goes the same across the board. So if you're looking for an agency and you think there's tens of thousands of agencies out there and my clients have all these choices, chances are they've probably maybe narrowed it down to seven. So forget about thinking of the thousands and thousands of competitors. Think about the seven that your clients might associate with your service. And then from there, step two would be putting those seven on a board and then imagining, having a thought experiment. If the same price on a proposal was from those seven competitors, how would you get your potential prospect to pay $1 more? So if you could figure out a way to get $1 above these seven competitors, you just basically successfully eliminated 99% of the competition. And then once you figure out how to get that $1 more, that's a great way to start building your differentiator. That $1 can easily turn into hundreds of thousands of dollars in premium pricing.
I love that. Focusing on your top seven is so important. I think looking at the sea of competitors can be so overwhelming. It's not something that, you know, your client or your customer is even doing. They're not making a spreadsheet and looking at all the pros and cons of 7,000. People only vet like three or four of those seven. You know, maybe they look at seven and then do a pros and cons, but they're not actually actively speaking to many more than like a handful.
Don't get discouraged. You know, being a student of this, the reason I love it so much is probably because I failed two dozen times reimagining, reinventing, you know, repositioning my agency over and over and figuring out how to be successful at it. And then from there, how to make a process out of it. So chances are you'll fail at first. But the nice thing is, in this day and age, you could rebrand, reposition, and probably wouldn't even show up on a client's radar.
Just there's 7,000 agencies, but there's millions of people who need, you know, your services, and it's true for any business as well. So I love that. Building off of that, you shared a story in the book where you needed to reposition your niche, and you did all of this research and you found, you know, the right niche, but something was missing. And you talked about the importance of authenticity when choosing your niche. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Why is it not enough just to pick a niche that, you know, you think would be good?
Yeah, so great question. That seems to be when everyone talks about positioning and specialization, everyone says, you know, find a niche, you know, find the, you know, look through your portfolio, figure out what you have the biggest foothold in and kind of build on that. So I kind of went that route. I call it logic versus magic, right? So the logic told me to go into this niche, big problems that I could solve, big money being thrown around. And like I said at the beginning, I tend to like to be the best, almost the best in the world at anything I try to do. So I had this great playing and great, you know, a sandbox to play in. But when it came down to me saying or writing blogs about this or addressing their concerns or entrenching myself, going to a trade show in that specific niche just felt like work, a lot of work of something I did not want to do. So the logic was there, but authentically, it was just me literally pulling something out of a hat. So one of the people that I work with, Blair Enns, very, very well known in the industry as far as positioning goes. He says, you know, imagine you're sitting backstage and the MC says, joining us today on stage is the world's leading expert in blank. Please welcome, fill in the blank. What do you want your future to be? The leading expert of what? And if it's something that doesn't excite you or something that seems like work, chances are you're never going to get to be the best in the world at it because it's just going to be another thing on your plate. So find something that truly resonates authentically that you can sink your teeth into. That's a really great start that a lot of business books I found did not offer as far as insights go.
Yeah, I love that. I think coming from that place of authenticity not only makes it easier on yourself as the business owner doing something that you enjoy, but it comes across to with your clients. I have an esthetician, like skincare lady, who just obsesses over what she does, and that comes through. And, you know, I've been to other similar services in the past, and they're just kind of like doing it as a job. And they never got me to come back. But because she was so invested in what she did and it came through, you're going to be able to attract more people, but also you'll be able to retain your clients and customers longer as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a hard and fast rule, but if you want to stack the deck in your favor, which supervillains usually do, authenticity first is definitely a way to stack the deck.
I love it. So that's something I wanted to ask you about. You have, in obviously, your book is titled Marketing for Supervillains. And on your website and through your marketing materials, you have this supervillain alter ego that you've adopted. Can you tell us a little bit about the meta behind that? How does this supervillain theme, does that play into the concept of decommoditization? Is it just something that you enjoy? What's kind of the thought behind that?
Yeah, the genesis of it was, I've been doing this 25 years. I'm kind of burnt out and cynical. So maybe I'm not a marketing superhero. I'm gonna you know, show the dirty underbelly of the industry. But the more I thought about it, and I was actually living the supervillain lifestyle without even knowing. So if you think about it on a grand scheme, if you're a smaller guy entering a market or you're trying to compete with a big brand in your industry, big brands, the industry leaders, are usually like superheroes, right? They have huge public favor. Everybody loves them. They have big muscles, which in marketing equates to big budgets. And to try to go head to head with a superhero, especially when you don't have all the resources, it's like a recipe for disaster. So a lot of clients would come to me and say, hey, I sell business phones. Let's do social media. They're like, Google doesn't care that you're this small. You're going head to head with AT&T in Google's eyes. What makes you different? Or in a sense, I need to stack the deck so that I can be successful. I can't just go out there and sell business phones with no differentiation. So if you think about any movie, a supervillain usually isn't as strong and as big and has as many resources as the superheroes do. They usually have to use their brains to outwit the superhero. So I'm sure you see this in your industry. You're always asked to do a lot with a little, right? So figuring out ways to kind of use what you have, which is usually not a lot, and get tremendous, tremendous results from it. So things like differentiation, things like, you know, putting yourself where the other people aren't to try and get a little bit of extra yardage, to use a football analogy, is kind of the genesis of where the whole supervillain lifestyle came into. And then, I don't know if you can tell from my background, but I tend to like offbeat things that are not mainstream. So the authenticity of speaking to the supervillain tropes and movie quotes and all that stuff just tied into my actual personality perfectly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can see that reflected in the book. I think that using this not only helps you kind of understand the concept a little bit better, but it creates this nice theme throughout everything you're doing, which is great to see. And it just makes everything so much more understandable. So you also mentioned, you know, doing more with less, which I think is something that's so common just in marketers in general, but a lot of the listeners to this podcast are bootstrapped founders and entrepreneurs who are doing just that, trying to do as much as they can with the budgets that they have, either through their business or through the savings that they have to start their business. And so I like how you've taken this idea of like scrappiness, but given more power to it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Glad that rang came through. That's definitely the intent.
Yeah, I love it. Okay. Well, what's next for you, Jesse?
So the book is still fairly new. So again, similar to our clients, bootstrapping it, learning the ropes, figuring out how to sell more books than every other marketing flavorless vanilla book out there, which is another reason for the cover and the name, trying to make yourself stand out. When people are looking through the library, they see a book marketing for supervillains, definitely different. So I ventured into creating the Supervillain Roadshow, doing keynotes across the country. Just did the first one in Oklahoma. It's kind of a multimedia marketing extravaganza. So seeing if I like that, bootstrapping that as well, and just, learning as I go so I could take all this knowledge and kind of impart it on my clients as well. So always, with 25 years in the agency world, definitely needed something to reinvigorate me, a challenge to make me sharpen my sword again. And this definitely is checking all those boxes. So just book promotion, public speaking promotion, and we'll see where, Supervillain pops up next in the populace.
Awesome. That sounds so exciting. If listeners are interested in learning about your next Supervillain Roadshow or purchasing your book, where can they, or even checking out Decommoditized, where can they learn more about you?
Yeah, so I you'll see as the authenticity shows, I love creating content on this stuff. So I'll go through my list. You can get the book on Amazon. I am a frustrated filmmaker at heart, so I tend to put overproduction into my little marketing videos. So if you find me on YouTube, I'm sure you'll crack a smile. Definitely over the top marketing videos under Decommoditized on YouTube. And then for shorter form content, Instagram Marketing Supervillains, TikTok Marketing Supervillain, and marketingforsupervillains.com, where one lucky person truly wants to recreate their origin story, we have what's called the nuclear edition of the book, where this is not a joke. You get to spend a weekend with me on board a nuclear submarine, and we will craft your new origin story and supervillainous marketing plan somewhere underwater on the planet Earth. And you will emerge with a brand new identity and an origin story. So marketingforsupervillains.com if you want to check that out. And yes, it's a real offer. So there's three versions of the book, that being the platinum tier, one of one, so one lucky reader.
I am obsessed with that. And that's what I was saying earlier with like this theme of supervillainy is present in everything you do. That is, I'm going to have to check that out. That is mind-blowing, insane. Absolutely amazing. And I think that, again, there's so much imagery and power in that. You're creating your supervillain story, then you emerge from the depths crafted anew. I am obsessed. I'm like cheesing so hard. This is because we're also doing an audio version of the podcast. So if you're listening, I am like so giddy over this. So definitely go to all the links Jesse just mentioned. Jesse, I checked out your YouTube yesterday and love the really theatrical videos that you're putting out there. So listeners, if you're into, learning by video or short form, all the links will be in the show notes. The links to the book will also be in the show notes. Overall, really enjoyed our conversation today, Jesse. So many insightful impacts in the book. I've really enjoyed that as well. And thank you so much for your time and sharing all of these insights with our audience.
Thanks so much. See, supervillains aren't so bad.
Yeah, they're really not.